The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is 9:05 on this Thursday, the 25th of May. Very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. It's good to be back with you, and it's good to let you know that the lines are open for you right now. If you want to comment on the items we've got lined up for you, to raise your own topics or issues, you know what to do, don't you? WhatsApp or text 086 6025000, or give us a call on 07491 25000. Now, if you're outside the Republic, for either of those two contact details, you drop the 00353 and away you go there. You can email us to comments@highlandradio.com. We love getting your emails from wherever you are. And don't forget, just to remind you, you can watch the programme on the social medias. Charlie, Marie, Elaine already with us, watching on YouTube and Facebook. On YouTube, it's Highland Radio Ireland, your smart TV, Fire Stick, phone or tablet, and the same applies for our Facebook pages as well. Right, Thursday morning, so lots of papers out. A story we'll be covering for you in a little while. The Tyrconnell Tribune have it on their front page. The Kearlock of the Council, Councillor Liam Blaney, has described potential job losses at Maui, Ireland's salmon processing plant in Fannet, as a major blow for the local economy and the workforce. Some of the workers have been with Maui for many years and depend on it for a livelihood. Staff at the plant were called to a workplace meeting on Friday afternoon to be told about the proposed redundancy. Sources close to the Ryn Mawr plant told the Tribune that the sector immediately affected is in filleting fish, where there are around 35 to 40 jobs since the weekend. The community has been alive with concerns about the number of redundancies involved, and it appears that Maui has not revealed their target figure required to meet their streamlining objectives. Plenty of coverage, as I say, on the front of and inside the Tyrconnell Tribune of that story today. The Donegal News, a leading Donegal doctor and member of the GP subcommittee of the Irish Medical Association, has warned that government plans to expand free GP care will lead to chaos in practices across the county. Dr. Dennis McCauley said GP practices in Donegal are already struggling to provide care for patients who are becoming increasingly frustrated at lengthening waiting times for appointments. He said if free GP care is introduced, it will be a disaster for a service that is already struggling to cope. The Democrat this morning, the family of beautiful Jasmine McMonagall have vowed that her memory will live on. Richard Burke was jailed for 14 years for her manslaughter on Monday by Mr. Justice Paul Burns at the Central Criminal Court. Jasmine, aged 28, when she was found in a pool of blood in the kitchen of her home at Forest Park, Killigordon, following a three-hour standoff between Burke and armed Gardaí. Burke, a 32-year-old of Killigordon and formerly Donegal Town, was found not guilty of murdering Miss McMonagall, but guilty of her manslaughter earlier this year. Jacqueline McMonagall, the mother of the devoted mother of two, has told of their world falling apart on January 4th, 2019. The Derry News this morning tells us that in a statement, a spokesperson for the Republican group Sirri said Sirri representatives in Derry have been contacted by a number of concerned parents. They stated this came following a meeting with paid community workers in the Creggan area, where it was revealed that young people between the ages of 13 and 16 have been working as what has been termed juvenile covert human intelligence sources. The statement continued, the revelations came as Sirri representatives have been working with parents and community workers in Creggan in a bid to stop a rise in antisocial behaviour. Having initially met with parents and community workers, concerns were relayed about an increase in drug use amongst young people. Questions were raised as to where these young people were getting the money from to purchase drugs, particularly in such a harsh time of financial crisis. They stated that further meetings were held with the parents, community workers and the young people of concern. Let us have a quick look at the Farmers' Journal this morning. A massive price gap has opened up between cattle slaughtered in the north and south in the last 3 weeks. A 380-kilogram U3 bullock slaughtered in Northern Ireland this week is making €2,306, while €2,059 is being paid for the same bullock in Ireland, a gap of 65 cents a kilogram, or €247 per head. the UK market, Ireland's main destination for beef, has been going from strength to strength with demand exceeding supply. On to the Nationals, and as you can imagine, all the front pages have a mixture of stories, but they include pictures of Tina Turner, who very sadly has passed away. One second here now. I'll talk more about that in a moment. But the main story in the front of the Irish Times is that Meta expects to cut up to 490 jobs from its Irish operation in the latest round of redundancies to hit the social media giant. The anticipated job losses at the company, which owns Facebook, Instagram and WhatsApp, would equate to about 18% of roles in its hub in Ireland. They came on top of hundreds of previous job cuts at Meta, as well as losses at other tech giants such as Microsoft and Twitter. And it's no doubt tech companies are using the global situation to reverse the mistakes that they've made in terms of employing too many people. I've noted already some people are starting to panic a little bit if you are planning on going to Dublin Airport because there's no car parking spaces. Let us know if this affects you. 086 60 25,000. I've seen a few posts from people saying that they're looking for lifts or what have you because they've got flights that are outside bus times or aren't convenient to them and there's nowhere to park the car. Well, Dublin Airport management has warned passengers that there are no more spaces at its car parks for the coming days. Yesterday, the operator said all its short and long-term parking was sold out for much of this week as summer season begins. Separate parking spaces are held for drop-off and collection. The closure of a privately owned car park near the airport that had previously accounted for about one-fifth of total capacity has been blamed for a collapse in availability. Although passenger numbers are now back to pre-COVID levels, 6,200 spaces have been taken out of the system following the sale of the Quick Park facility. These spaces were also unavailable last summer. DAA, which operates the airport, has placed a successful bid to purchase the facility. That move is under review by the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, which must approve the deal. But that's down the line. If you're travelling to Dublin Airport over the next couple of days, there's nowhere to park your car. As I say, does that affect you? What are you doing in order to deal with that situation? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Now, this is a story that's been a lot of conversation about, not one we've discussed in great detail on this programme. So if you want to get involved in this conversation or to start the conversation or to expand it, let us know. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts, as you know, or call 07491 25,000. The GAA says it will bring sanctions against those involved in providing any form of competition for players under the age of 12. An email from GAA headquarters at Croke Park to clubs around the country outlines that at under 12 level and at under 12 level and under, there is a ban on all competition, blitzes or events that involve knockout stages or the handing out of winners or runners-up medals, trophies, awards or prizes. Now, what do you think about this? I mean, I think we really have to be careful that we don't raise a generation of snowflakes. I can understand about inclusion and what have you, but I mean, is it not good at a certain age to sort of learn about winning and losing and achieving your goals and success and maybe even dealing with a little bit of failure? You know, like if you are on a losing team, is that not an emotion that you need to sort of work on and learn early on? I mean, we're protecting the children and I get that. No one wants to do that more than I, but I just wonder, then at what point do you start educating them about the life that comes at you so bloody quickly, doesn't it? We have to, so much to deal with, you know, and young people have to deal with everything in life that they do. They have to deal with the stresses and strains that the parents are going through. They have to deal with bereavement sometimes with their granny or granddad or something, you know. And I'm not sure exactly what the logic is. I presume it's to foster an atmosphere of inclusion and everyone is a winner. But at what point do you sort of start educating children that life is not just a bed of roses and that sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, and you have to deal with it responsibly either way? Anyway, have you any views on it? Reading on here, though, the move is likely to once again stoke the debate over whether there should be facility for competition at a younger age grade than currently exists. As it stands, all football and hurling games played at under 12 level or below are held under the banner of Go Games, which are intended to be non-competitive. This Go Games initiative has been in place for several years and has been part of the GEA's bid to tackle the practice of teams nurturing the best players and neglecting the rest. Again, come on now. Right, what do you think? Get involved in that one. We might put a poll up there on our social medias on that one as well. I think it could be useful to get the public's view on it. As I say, I just have a concern now at this point that we're insulating children to such an extent that what are the consequences for them when they get to the, as I say, the harsh realities of life, which can come at you really quite quickly and early. The Irish Daily Mail this morning, Tánaiste Micheál Martin has criticised Fine Gael ministers over budget kite-flying, saying this was not helpful. The Fianna Fáil leader spoke out after three Fine Gael ministers wrote an article for the Irish Independent calling for a €1,000 tax break at the next election. Finance Minister Michael McGrath was not informed of the article's publication in advance. The Fianna Fáil TD for Cork South Central told reporters yesterday that he would not be bullied by such public requests. Now, I think also he needs to be careful with his language. That's a very strong word in this day and age with strong connotations. Well, I understand the point he was trying to make, but I think he could have used a different word. But anyway, the move by Fine Gael to publicly engage in budgetary negotiations has raised eyebrows across government. It's unusual, as I say, 6 months out from the budget, Fine Gael are pretty much saying that if there is any break for the squeezed middle, the working families, that their fingerprints and DNA will be all over it. And Fianna Fáil obviously are not going to be too happy about that, because if Fianna Fáil, it's really quite clever if you think about it from a Fine Gael perspective, if Fianna Fáil, their finance minister, doesn't deliver that tax break for hard-pressed working families, well, it looks very bad for Fianna Fáil and offers some sort of a separation, you could say, between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, which is sometimes hard to see. And if they do, include it in the budget, well, then you can thank Fine Gael for it, can't you? It's very, very clever, and you can see why it might cause a little bit of, or a lot of, tension in a coalition, because either way, Fine Gael, in coming out early, they either throw Fianna Fáil under the bus if it's not delivered, or they can take the credit if it is. And that's how politics work. That's how public relations work. It's as simple as that. The Star this morning, the search at a reservoir for evidence in the Madeleine McCann case was sparked by information from a very credible source. The tip-off was reportedly made by an informer registered with the German equivalent of the FBI. Officers are reportedly searching for any fragments of Madeleine's pink Amour M&S pyjamas she was wearing when she vanished in May 2007. The search area of the remote site in Portugal is roughly the size of a football pitch. But by early evening yesterday, officers were concentrating their search on a 50 by 50 foot clearing in a wooded area alongside the water. Their search continues today. They did remove some evidence yesterday. What that is, we certainly don't know at this point. If you are a Netflix subscriber and inclined to share your passwords, or maybe someone has your password and you've forgotten, well, then you will have been receiving an email reminder from Netflix telling you, very naughty, don't be doing that. So if your sister or your auntie or your brother down in Cork or Galway or Dublin, or your young one is down at college, it is likely that they might start putting blockers on it because they need more money. Netflix is emailing Irish users, reminding them not to share their accounts with people outside their household. That's the building, effectively, because they can geolocate where it's being watched. The streaming giant said those wanting to pass on their details must pay an extra $4.99. It comes after the company, which has lost subscribers recently, began a crackdown on account sharing last year in countries including Costa Rica and Peru. Now it's Ireland's turn. On Tuesday, Netflix posted a stern statement detailing the tough new policy online. It read, starting today, we'll be sending this email to members who are sharing Netflix outside their household in Ireland. A Netflix account is for use by one household. I got the email. I don't think I share it. I don't actually, in fact. And it's not for any righteous reasons. I just don't, anyone I know who has it themselves. But there you go. If you are sort of sharing it with a relation, or a maybe it's your partner who doesn't live with you, or maybe it's a young person down in college in Galway or Dublin or wherever it might be, you might find you're having to stump up an extra $4.99. And as I say, all papers covering the passing of a person described as simply the best, Tina Turner. Music legend Tina Turner, who sold 100 million records in a career spanning seven decades, has died aged 83. She found fame with abusive husband Ike in the 1960s before becoming a superstar in her own right after her divorce. Mick Jagger said she was truly an enormously talented performer, and she's achieved so much. She came through so much to achieve what she did achieve. She's a world record holder. She played to the biggest ever paying audience. She was in the Guinness Book of Records. 180,000 people in South America watched her perform. And I think for lots of you listening there, she's been an ever-present in your life. We'll play a track from Tina a little later on in the programme. So we want to know, what is your favourite Tina Turner song? Just text or WhatsApp it. Which song would you like to hear? And the one that's mentioned the most is the one we'll play a little later on in the programme. So what Tina Turner song would you like to hear? And as well, if you have any memories, maybe it was a song that you got married to, or maybe it was a song that was played at an important time of your life. Let us know. Share your stories and tributes, if you wish, to the late, great Tina Turner. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts. And don't forget to pick your favourite Tina Turner song, and we'll play that out a little later on in the programme. Right, OK. We had this message passed on to us, and I want to read it out here. My auntie had an incident in her car yesterday morning. This was actually the morning before, so that would have been Tuesday. My auntie had an incident in her car on Tuesday morning on her way to Mass. She mistook the corner at the road diversions in Stranoller and ended up giving her wheel a bad bang on the curb, and the tyre began to go flat. The car behind her, which had originally flagged her out of courtesy to go ahead of her, seen what had happened and followed her until she was able to get pulled in. She was quite shook from the bang and realised something had happened to the car, and he took his time to calm her down, offered her to sit in his own car while he changed the wheel for her and got her back on the road. She and we, as her family, were so very grateful for this help and felt it deserved recognition. There are many, many kind people helping others day to day, and we felt it was important to share these positive experiences and how appreciated they are. So fair play to that gentleman. He saw what happened. He followed the lady in her car. When she pulled over, he got her into his car and then changed the wheel for her and sent her on the way and calmed her down as well too, which I think was quite important. So fair play to that person who helped that lady out, and the family got in touch with us just to mention that. And we love messages like that, by the way. Acts of kindness, any positive news, get them into us, and we are more than happy to share them out across the Northwest. Now, the Irish Second Level Students' Union welcomes the recent announcement from the Department of Education and State Examinations Commission regarding the Leaving Cert results date and further adjustments. The ISSU, alongside various bodies in the education and higher education sector, had lobbied heavily for the Leaving Cert results to be moved to an earlier date, as was the case pre-COVID-19. Cassie Lambs, Donegal Regional Officer for the Irish Second Level Students' Union. Cassie, good morning to you. Thanks so much for calling up.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you keeping?
I'm great. Thank you.
Right, okay. So your union is welcoming this move, and I suppose an early announcement too ahead. Well, is it ahead of exams? Are the Leaving Cert started yet?
No, they're starting about 2 weeks
Yeah,
now,
so
2 weeks.
It's good to have this information in advance of that, isn't
great.
It?
Great. It's great news to hear.
Tell us why this is good news for students, from a student's perspective.
Well, from my perspective, it's great news because if you compare, say, last year's date in 2021, their date was September 3rd. That's when they got the results. Pre-COVID, they got the results on August 5th in 2019. But now, thankfully, they'll get the results on August 25th. And this is really helping because if you compare with the CAS, some universities will ask evidence for where's your results and to make accommodations for yourself, and this is not helping students. So now it's great they'll have the results before September, and their universities will be happy enough now.
Yeah, and it gives a bit of breathing space,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Exactly.
Just removes some of that anxiety. And as I say, it's good, and fair play to the department to get this news out nice and early, because as I say, it's a stressful time with exams. It's a stressful time, I suppose, if you're heading off to college for the first time. You don't need any extra stresses and anxieties, is that it?
Exactly.
Also, too, you mentioned accommodation as well. If there's a little bit of certainty as to where you might be going, it hopefully, although it's going to still be difficult to find accommodation, relieve a little bit of pressure in that regard.
Oh, yeah, because, like, say, assumptions, if you want to go to, for example, Dublin, if you can get accommodation for housing, then you might have to travel up to Dublin maybe every 4 days each week, and that's using public transport and using all that money that could spend one night in a hotel, for example, but maybe you just can't afford it. And it's great now, but hopefully there might be some accommodations, but the government really needs to look at that in my own perspective.
Yeah, no, I think you're dead right. And what I like about this whole conversation as well is the voice of the student being heard. And it's great to see press releases out and people like yourself being put forward to speak about it. Because for too long, and I've said it on this programme many times before, it felt like we were talking about students and not to them and listening to them.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the ISSU are here to do. We're made by students for students. Like for me, example, I'm here to represent, uplift and defend Sinn Féin all across Donegal. That's my job and that's what I'm here to do. And say, for example, in the ISSU have a seat in the Department of Education. We're usually called, like, there can't be any conversations about us without us. That's what we're said and that's what we're told. So now it's great that we are more in part of the department's education decisions. And it's just great news overall.
Yeah, and again, credit where it is due. The Department of Education seem to be listening to the concerns and following through on them, Cassie.
Yeah, definitely. So overall, the ISSU, we really do welcome the new decision.
All right, brilliant stuff. Okay, before I let you go, I know you're a sports person yourself, and I mentioned just at the start of the show that GEA is warning it will sanction clubs holding competitive games for children under 12. Now, it's like buy one, get one free, right? I bring you in to talk about the changes to the Leaving Cert, but I get this for free, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So what's your view? What is your views now as a young person, also as a sports person?
Well, you see, I've been playing camogie and hurling since I was about 4. And camogie and hurling, they're competitive. And it's the same with Go Games. It's a competitive sport. It's a great sport. And it's just hard to believe that here you won't get a county title in under 12, and then you go to under 14 and you can go for county level and you could win Ulster finals or even get to the All-Ireland final like I did for county, and yet they won't even get the experience of winning a final or anything like that. You know, it's not going to toughen them up and say, here, everyone's a winner, you know, when that's not how it goes. You have to work.
So in a way, what they seem to be trying to do is protect under 12s, but you think it's kind of holding them back because there's certain elements of sport and competition that they're missing out on. And then it comes, I suppose, then right at them as they get to over 12 levels.
Yeah, because from my experience, like, you always will have a good day or you'll have a bad day. And even with the under 12, I remember I'd come home and I'd be angry with myself and my dad. He's probably my biggest inspiration for camogie and hurling. He's my coach. And, you know, he would always say, you know, you have to keep your head up. Even when I was about 10 or 11, he would say, you're not always going to win. And that's the problem. You're never always going to win. And it's a hard pill to swallow sometimes. But really, it toughens you up and it really brings you into the real world. Saying,
yeah, it's part of maturing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because, like, it's really told me, if you want something really badly, you have to keep working hard for it. And if you want to keep winning games, you need to practice. You need to work harder.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how it goes. That's what I've seen.
One of the arguments, and I won't keep you much longer, Cassie, one of the arguments is that, you know, coaches might, you know, you're a handy player, right? Coaches might go, right, Cassie's got a big future here, and over focus on you. And then other students who might be a little bit weaker or need a little bit more coaching might get left behind. Yeah. Can you understand that concern? I mean, a different style of coaching would fix that, but not necessarily removing the competitive element from it.
Because if you remove the competitive area of it, say some of the weaker players, how are they going to get motivated maybe to get a bit stronger or to get a bit faster? They're not really going to get motivated without that bit of competition. Because if they see, say myself or something like that, if they see you winning, they might get a bit jealous and they're like, it just clicks.
Drives
like,
them on, yeah.
I want to do
and
what they're
also
doing.
Too, in terms of identifying the best players, if the best players aren't sort of experiencing competition and that desire to win, are they going to reach their full potential by the time they come into the under-14s, etc. as well? I would argue not, because they could lose interest and maybe try and seek out that competitive buzz in a different sport.
Yeah, I agree, because like some parents might say it's either you win or you lose. And then some parents be like, oh, everyone's a winner, you know, you just keep doing what you're doing. But really, you need competitive in life. That's how it goes. Life is just competitive for jobs or for college or anything. So it really just says, say for camogie, you do need to have competition.
Yeah, I mean, even when you think, yeah, and I get it, because even when you think of an exam, it is a competition.
Oh, it is.
You know what I mean? So even when you start doing your first exams in secondary school, for an example, if you've got a very passive attitude to it, you know, are you going to get the best out of yourselves? But if you've had some, you know, if you understand the importance of sort of that competition and you're competing with yourself effectively, well, then maybe you might do better in the exams. I just don't think it's fully thought through, Cassie.
Exactly.
And I think you seem to be of the same view.
Yeah, it's what the exams, like you were saying, like say your friends, you might have a bit of competition with them.
Mm.
And if you're really close, you were like, oh, I want to get higher than you in Irish, or I want to get higher than you in English. Mm. Like even school, the world is a competitive place.
Yeah. And just in the education sector, if someone needs a little bit more attention or assistance, we hope to provide that.
Yeah.
Maybe that in the sporting arena, that's the way to do it as well.
Exactly.
All right, Cassie, listen, it's been really interesting. Thanks very much for coming in and talking to us on both issues. We'll chat to you again, I'm sure. That's Cassie Lamb, Donegal Regional Officer for the Irish Second Level Students Union, 14 years of age, in second year at Loretto Secondary School, Letterkenny. Right, you better get back for the next class.
I better.
Okay, we'll be back with more shortly. Now, I'm pleased to welcome back onto the programme Liam O'Dwyer, International and Migration Advisor with the Red Cross. Good morning to you, Liam. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's good to have you back on the programme. Right, now a meeting was held last night for those affected by the Chrysler tragedy. What was the purpose of the meeting, Liam?
There were two reasons. The first was to report back to the community as to the level of income that the fund had received and the expenditure, and then what we had spent the money on and how much we had given to the various groups in terms of the families of the bereaved, people who were injured, people who were made homeless, people who lost their jobs or were out of work for a while, and a whole variety of payments that had been made. And then to discuss with the community the remaining sum of money, which is €236,000. So what we were doing was firstly just accounting for ourselves and for the money. And secondly, then looking to consult with the community in relation to the final expenditure, which we want to target at the community itself to meet the needs of the community themselves.
Yep, such was the public generosity, because so many people were so moved by these awful events. €1.9 million came in, and there are still bits coming in. Up until now, €1.64 million has been paid out. Now, obviously, not getting into the details, specifics of that, because this is in support of private individuals at a very difficult time. But as much as you're comfortable as outlining, Liam, how was that €1.64 million distributed to the benefit of people?
Well, there were the first section was up to Christmas. So up to Christmas, it was very much emergency payments to people to get them over, obviously, the Christmas period, but to immediately compensate for loss of jobs, loss of income, and obviously loss of homes for some people. And then all of the various travel and medical expenses and funeral expenses that were involved. So that was the first tranche, and that was largely led by a number of our members here in Donegal, and with then we put a member of staff, Niall Keane, in place. So he was there every week to meet people and to ensure that all the needs were being met. And then the second tranche then, which is what we have been working on for the last 2 months, we set up an advisory committee with a representative from the community and also with an independent financial advisor, and then some of our own leadership and board. And what we designed was a framework to enable us to give what we described as bereavement recognition payments. So to look at the various needs of people who had been bereaved in terms of a loss of a breadwinner, a loss of a child, and all the knock-on effects on a family. So that was done to make certain this was very clear and objective. And it was the same for everybody, people who were bereaved and people who were injured. And we met with the families individually, and we discussed that with them, both Niall Keane and me. And we explained that, therefore, the amount of money that each would be given. And I'd have to say that was very well received. So we have given that money out at this stage. There's probably about two or three payments yet to come out once we get the bank deed, the bank account details. And then we that phase will be ended. So what we're now targeting is very much the community. Mm. And that's what the community said to us day one. At the very first meeting, they said, look, you make certain that the families of the bereaved and those who are injured are looked after first, and then come back to us with whatever is left. And so that's what we did last night, to say that, you know, we have just, we've obviously 236,000, some more monies I'm sure will come in. And we're looking now to the community to direct us in terms of how best to use those funds.
Yeah, and how, that, I would imagine, Liam, is a little bit complicated because, you know, say, for instance, someone might propose something in a particular area that might require planning, or there might be plans for something else in that particular area. And really, that's kind of an area that Red Cross is not going to get involved in. It's about sort of, you know, distributing this money with the agreement and the satisfaction of all of those who attended that meeting for last night. So it's not necessarily, it's not overly complicated either, but it's not necessarily either completely plain sailing, I'd imagine.
No, and we're also conscious, to be very fair, the local authority, and we are in touch with them. The local authority are together making plans with the community for, I suspect, more infrastructural areas, which would be way beyond us. Our fund is a humanitarian fund, and we want to try and target aspects of the community that you would with the humanitarian fund now. So, for instance, areas like trauma, and having someone available on a more long-term basis within the community to provide trauma support. The HSE are obviously providing counselling, but this would be someone who is there to do a lot more than that, to do training within the community, as well as working with various community groups, as well as individuals. Mm. And then we looked at other ideas, such as the various activities we might support from a youth perspective. I think at the very first meeting, again, there was a real focus on youth. You know, mm-hmm. we want to be sure that our young people are going to be OK after this. So we looked at various aspects, working with Feroiga, working with the local GAA and the other sports and social clubs, and the schools, obviously, who would play a leading role. Mm-hmm. So they were some of the areas. And I suppose what's now agreed is that the community association will take those areas that they initially identified and that we have added to. They will have their own facilitation meeting within the community, and then we will meet together at the end of June to decide on the best approach.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, just to get a sense of what you're saying, and maybe the move from the meeting. Obviously, this is all incredibly still very, very recent, and still people. Yes. Very much in the grieving process, and will continue so for a long time. But I get the impression that there was a focus on the future as well, and protecting and sort of embracing the young and building the future of Chrysler through them. Is that kind of the sentiment that was there?
Yeah, that's what was there. I think there was a recognition that infrastructural work with the local authority will materialise in time. So this was more focused on the future. I know we certainly discussed areas like educational bursaries. We discussed the use of the playground, because there's a wonderful, wonderful playground there in Chrysler. And then supporting facilities for younger people, not so much facilities, activities, I should say, for younger people. But the trauma piece, I think, is important, because having somebody there within Chrysler, and we would have noticed it with having a member of staff there, because once someone is there, they can pick up the needs very, very quickly, and the mood. So this is to put somebody then in place from a trauma perspective, who could offer support in that area over a longer period, and again have them associated with the the community association.
And Liam, obviously, some of the stuff that will be put in, as you just mentioned, the trauma person and activities and what have you for the young people, that will continue into the medium to long term. But in terms of the Red Cross's role in this at this point, I'm not sure how it normally works. Do you have an exit date in terms of, you know, making decisions for this €236,000 and then, you know, taking a step back? Or how does that process work normally, Liam?
Well, I suppose we would take a step back from the perspective that we have a member of staff who has been down for 1 or 2 days every week for the last number of months. But we have members here who are very active in the community, and they won't be going anywhere, and they will be working very closely with the community. So there is no sense of the Red Cross walking away. I think what the Red Cross would like to do at the same time is make certain that the money that it has been given has been spent, or at a minimum allocated, so that we're not dealing with the money issue anymore. It's more we're dealing with how to enable the community to move on from that awful tragedy.
And of course, finally, Liam, dealing with lots of people that deal with things themselves in very different ways. Are you as happy as you can be that, particularly in dealing with those bereaved or injured, that they'll be satisfied with the engagements of the Red Cross now?
Greg, it's hard to comment on that. Certainly all the feedback we have received has been very positive. And that doesn't mean that everybody is satisfied. No, that simply is not. And you couldn't meet every single need. But I think generally people are satisfied that we've thought it through. We've put a framework in place. And I think having both a number of our volunteers available, and in particular having a member of staff whom I think people were delighted with, that was there on a weekly basis, I think has made a great difference.
Okay, and we appreciate you making yourself available so soon after that meeting and giving us those details, Liam. Thanks very much for your time. I do appreciate
it. Thank you, Greg.
Okay, that's Liam O'Dwyer, International and Migration Advisor with the Red Cross. That's off the back of that meeting last night with the community in Chrysler and people affected by the Chrysler tragedy. And there are some, obviously, from outside the community. And that's just outlining how that money has been distributed with respect to not getting into the intimate details, because that might reveal private information as it relates to those who were most directly affected by it. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Now, comments coming in directly towards the end of and after our interview there with Liam. A caller says, I was a very close member of a family that was killed in Chrysler, and I have not received a penny from the Red Cross, and yet family members have. Can he explain why? Now, we'll try and deal with that off air, because, as I say, I only got that after the interview had concluded, but we can try and get some clarity for you off air, if that's okay. Another, can he clarify how only certain members of families were given care while others were not? I just couldn't face going to those meetings. And I know that is a difficulty, and it's one I'd tried to, I can't involve myself in it, and I have to be careful and sensitive, but I do know that for some it was too difficult to actually attend the meetings in Chrysler, and I'm not really quite sure, and it's not for me to say, I'm not really quite sure how that was dealt with, but in this listener's view, they couldn't face going to the meetings and are looking for clarity as to how only certain members of families were given care while others were not. Hi, Greg. They say, right, I'll come back to that because I don't want to jump from such a serious issue to comments on other things. But we are moving on to a story that is broken on the front of the Tyrconnell Tribune today. Grab the paper, extensive coverage on the front of it and inside it on this story. Maui released a press release saying it's with great regret that Maui Ireland, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, has announced that it's begun a programme of consultation with staff regarding a reduction in employee numbers. Following a global review, a decision has been reached to streamline a number of processing plants which are under capacity. This will result in secondary fish processing ceasing in Ireland by October 2023, leading to a number of redundancies at the company's Rinmore base in Fannad. The 30-day consultation programme begins on Friday, May 19th. The consultation exercise will be used to establish if staff who currently work in secondary production can be deployed elsewhere within the company's Donegal headquarters. Until this engagement is concluded, the company cannot provide a figure as to the final number of redundancies. Maui Ireland intends to grow other aspects of operations in Ireland later in the year, and the overall business outlook remains positive and healthy. Maui Ireland would like to put on record its gratitude to all its staff for their exemplary commitment to the company, and intends to provide every support possible through the consultation process. Councillor Liam Blaney is Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council and a local rep there as well. Of course, Liam, thanks for taking the call this morning.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, so this is going to have, if it's followed through on, and the sort of tone of that press release suggests, this is going to affect an awful lot of individuals and their families in the area, it seems.
Well, first of all, you know, it's devastating news for the area and for the surrounding areas as well. There's people, a lot of people employed by Moy. But when we hear them saying that they're going to deploy some of them and other parts of the business, and what the voluntary redundancies, hopefully there won't be too many, if any, that will be displaced from being employed there.
Do you think that?
And I did.
Go ahead, Liam. Sorry.
I did make contact with Minister McCann Logue, who's the Minister for Marine, and I'm hoping to get a meeting with himself and Moy in the very near future to make sure that everything can be done as far as he's concerned as Minister for Marine to try and secure the rest of the jobs that are there, because it's very, very important to the whole area, the Fannett Peninsula, and as I said, to the surrounding areas, that if a main employer in Fannett, and a main employer nearly from Fannett to Letterkenny, and I think it's important that what can be secured there will be secured, and that the people that are working there will be made aware of that as soon as possible.
Can you read between the lines a little bit in their press release and their plans? Like, what is happening in the industry that has led to them making these cuts as far as you can determine? Is it clear to you?
Well, there's a lot of speculation, Greg, and there is speculation that maybe there's a plant for processing startup in Scotland. It's supposed to take a number of years for it to get there, and a lot of questions coming from Scotland to the final plant. As I say, a lot of speculation, and I'm not going to go into further until we have a meeting with them and we better understand what the problems are in there.
In terms of other employment options for those that might lose their jobs, is there anything can be done maybe through the Department of Marine or other agencies of the government to find alternative work for anyone that might find themselves losing their jobs, that maybe a move or voluntary redundancy doesn't suit them?
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully they'll be able to apply most of them, not them all. It doesn't go for voluntary redundancy, but I'm saying that, you know, yourself, you're well aware of this area. Mm. And to get employment of any kind is very difficult. But I suppose if one option may be, because of all the extra housing that's going to be coming on board in the very near future, that there could be extra jobs in construction. But a million people will be have the skills for the construction industry, I don't know.
Yeah, and many people working here, Liam, would have been working here for a long time, wouldn't they? They'd be much of their working life would have been at Moy.
I would have been. That's there nearly as long as I can remember. Well over 40 years, I know. I can't say exactly when I started, but it's definitely well over 40 years in the area. And I've employed a lot of people down the years.
Yeah, because
and
as you sort of said
in... it will be in the future.
Sorry, Liam, as you said in your conversation with John as well, you know, there aren't an awful lot of alternatives. You've talked about maybe construction being an option for some, but in rural areas with few job opportunities, we don't want to see any further depopulation, do we? You know what I mean? You want as many people to stay around, stick around and be employed in the local area as possible, because then it starts having impacts on other areas of local life.
Massive impact on other businesses and the area too. And as you say, the rural areas, the population declined all the time in them. And some instances has been forced on them by planning regulations and things like that. But if we can keep jobs in the area, at least there's some chance of keeping the people in the area as well. It's getting more difficult in the rural areas to try and keep people there.
Yeah.
To try and keep employment there for them.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, listen, thanks for your time this morning and an update there. That is Councillor Liam Blainey Hirlock of Donegal County Council there, and that consultation period is ongoing, and hopefully we'll get more information once that has concluded. And it's a tough old time when there's question marks over your employment and all those people too. If many of them have families, of course, and bills to pay and what have you. So anyone who has an insight into the process that's ongoing there, by the way, if you're an employee and you want to speak to us off the record or give us an insight into it, please get in touch with us in confidence to 086 60 25000, WhatsApp or text, or give us a call on 07491 25000. Okay, you're tuned to Thursday's 9 till noon show, and can you believe we're already an hour into it? We've got so much to get in over the next 2 hours. So what we'll do is we'll take a quick break for the news and the obituary notices. Please stay right where you are. We want to maintain your company after this break.